here, Reverend T. Walker, Mrs. Walker, and our Indian comrades, who on the women's side are the faithful Golden, Pearl, and Blessing, and of late years, Star, Joy, Gladness, and others, without whose loyal cooperation the work that has grown among the Temple children would have been impossible. But though for the sake of straightforward storytelling I explain the personnel, there is nothing we should so deprecate as the focusing of the attention upon us. Rather, overlook us. Perhaps in order to avoid needless misunderstanding, it should be said at the outset that we write from old India, and that we do not profess to touch upon aspects and problems affecting new India and India in transition, matters so delicate and intricate that they are better left to abler pens. Each phase of life, as we find it here, is a study in itself. Each is intensely interesting. But the voice that speaks through these pages, if indeed we have caught it clearly enough to make it articulate to others, is the voice of the old land. For of the three distinct voices sounding in India today, we have heard it longest and know it best. Finally, we have tried to be true. We cannot say more. Those who have tried to be true know how difficult truth-telling is, perhaps because we see so little of the whole truth at a time. We found a large shell on the shore one day, blackened at the edges, iridescent above. It lay where the wave had washed it, wet and shining on the sand. The southwest monsoon had brought us many beautiful things. The sand was strewn with them, but the special shell for loveliness lay alone among them. And we stopped before we picked it up to look at it in its setting of sand, which on that part of the coast sparkles as if garnet dust had been sprinkled over it. Then we saw that the little crustacean had stopped to look at it too. They were crawling over it and into it and about it, but they did not see it as a whole. They were too small. Truth is like that shell. We are like the infant crabs and beach fleas. Perhaps the most we can hope to do is to tell the changeful colors of the little bit of the shell we see, avoiding over-coloring as we would avoid a lie. And we can resist the temptation to omit all mention of the broken, blackened edges of the shell. Chapter 2. The Fort. It was early afternoon on the edge of a South Indian town, at the place where it touches the desert. It was hot, but those happy little sunbirds, the children, darted about in the sunshine or played in the doubtful shadow of the palms which border the Brahmin street. There were vivid splashes of color where the little children played. Otherwise, the street was colorless and empty. For the people who lend it life were out of sight in the dark of windowless rooms, trying to feel cool. To the left of where we stood, above housetops and palms, rose the central temple tower, carved in stone for 100 feet. A wall faced us, crossing the end of the street. The wall was of clay, clumsily but massively built, rough with uneven additions and patches, the work of careless generations. It was bare and ugly and covered, as all the world was then, with the dust of rainless months. The little flowers and grasses that had struggled for life on its ridges in the last wet season had been burnt up long ago. Only there, famished shreds was left to tell how the poor wild things had tried to decorate man's prosaic. But green trees showed above it. We wondered what was inside. A door was set deep in the wall, facing the Brahmin street. We knocked, but no answer came. Then friendly voices called us from across the street, and we saw that friendly faces were watching us from veranda-shaded doors.